Jupiter Broadcasting presents this show in mega stereo sound. This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com. This week on the Linux Action Show, is Canonical picking Banshee's pockets and hurting the GNOME project? We've got a few theories for what's going on here. Then Google and Oracle's battle over Android is heating up. But is this just a distraction from what we really need? Tune in to find out. Plus so much more. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. And welcome to Linux Action Show, season 14, episode... I just did this, and well, episode 7, it's episode 7, everybody. Don't listen to anyone who tells you it's episode anything other than 7, because 7 is the proper episode number. My name is Brian, that guy over there is Chris.
Hey there, Brian. Check out this awesome megaphone, I guess you could call it, if you're watching the video version.
Awesome.
It is kind of a massive phone,
awesome.
But what's cool about it, it's dual core, okay, so that's rad, dual core ARMS. Runs Android or Ubuntu.
Gosh, that's glorious.
Now, it's way big. This is just a prototype model.
Two screens on it, so it's one screen for each?
Yeah, and look, on the video out, it's Ubuntu on the video.
This is what
out
I
feed.
Want.
So it...
This
to
is
t-
what
I know,
I want.
Right?
I want a smartphone. Like, they've got... I mean, they've been rumoring about, like, the quad-core ARMS coming to smartphones over the next year or so. I'm like, dude, a quad-core ARM, stick it in there, run Ubuntu or some other great Linux distro. Come on,
he's got a USB keyboard hooked up to it. He's got a USB keyboard hooked up
God,
to it.
God, that's what I want. I want to get to work. I want to sit down at my desk, plug it in, and that be my main like productivity machine. Sure, maybe now, for development purposes, I want something beefier. But for day-to-day usage, some web browsing, some email, playing back
it's
some
rocking.
Music, why not just stick it right in there? It's everything I want. It's a tablet. It's a smartphone. It's a laptop. It's everything. That why not? Why don't we have that yet?
Well,
the fact that we don't have that makes Brian angry, and he just starts talking, and he won't stop, and he doesn't let Chris get a word in edgewise because of it. And this is what we have
so
to
angry.
Put up with.
You know what you got, though, is the Motorola Atrix is coming out, right? And that's that Android phone that you can dock into a laptop dock.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool, but it's that splashtop Linux, whereas this is rocking Ubuntu.
A full-on desktop distro.
That's what I want. I want a full Linux, Brian, because that you put that in there, you get that all loaded up, and just like you're saying, well, in this case, and with a thing like that, you'd have to throw it in your backpack, but, you know, that's still
so cool.
That's a step in the right direction.
So cool.
It's, you know, beginner.
So cool.
Now, how you doing, man? So you're at home this week, staying close
to I'm at home still. I'm sitting here at my desk out here, and I'm actually in my pajamas right now, though you don't know that because I've got a blazer on to cover up the fact that I'm in my pajamas, so don't tell anyone watching the show that I'm in my pajamas right now.
We'll keep that our little secret. We won't tell
anyone.
Holy
moly, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. I got family coming over later
today. You got family coming over?
Yeah. So it'll probably be, you know, one of those things where I'll probably start editing the show, and right as I get the show just about ready to encode and upload, that's when family's going to arrive. So then it's just going to sit there all ready to go on my hard drive, but not able to get it out.
It's like
the entire time that they're here.
Hates the Linux Action Show. They hate open
source. Brian, the internet.
The internet.
The internet.
Man, they hate it.
I mean, I'm trying to contribute, you know, the Linux Action Show to the internet.
Wow.
I know, and they stop that.
Archive.
But you know who doesn't stop us, Brian? You know who never stops us? They enable us, and that's GoDaddy.com.
Everybody, go ahead, check out, type in Linux, you get 10% on a domain name purchase. Type in Linux 2.0, you get 20% on the whatever purchase that you do.
On hosting, and you know what? I did a little bit of fancy. I registered a couple of domains last night. I did. I registered two domains, a jblive.am and jblive.tv. And jblive.am takes you right to our live audio stream, and jblive.tv takes you right to our video stream. And I wanted to point something out because I noticed something when I was jumping around. I actually bought a few things last night. I'll be honest. I went on a little bit of a shopping spree over on GoDaddy. And I noticed that when you're ordering now, check that order summary area because there's a little link there you click to enter promo code. And that's the trick now because you enter that and then you just enter right there. You can enter in Linux or whatever you like, and it applies
right
the,
away.
The discount
you
that
see
way.
It.
And then you can continue to check
right
out
there.
And you save yourself
you see
some
it
cash.
Right there. Love it.
Yeah.
Thank you, GoDaddy. Awesome stuff. Playing for the things and the stuff and the whatnot.
Yeah.
Great.
And thanks to Danica for saying good morning to us and one more edition of the Lunatic Selection Show.
Way more thanks to Danica than to GoDaddy, because really Danica made this all possible. She is a racing star and a GoDaddy girl, copyright, and she's a customer. Oh my gosh.
Yep. I know. Yep. I know. Yep. I'm kind of.
I have it on good authority that Danica runs the Open SUSE.
Yeah. She seems like she likes
heard
the ask.
That.
I could see that
from an authority. Yeah.
You know, race car drivers don't have a lot of time to tweak configuration files. They prefer to use.
No, they like to go to websites and have one-click installs. So that's why
Danica they should put Danica up on the OpenSUSE page. Now, I want to tell you, Brian, about a slick Android pick.
All right.
Now, it's called RD Mute, and it's totally free. And here's why I love it. You ever been like in a meeting, or you're at home watching TV? Maybe browsing the web for porn, something like that, and you get a phone call coming in, and you pick it up, and you look at it, and you go, oh, man, that jerk again, you know, and you take that phone, and you just want to put it down, like you would hang up an old-school phone, because what was the best thing about old-school phones?
It.
You could hang them up.
That was
great. You hang that sucker up. Yeah, exactly. So this is RD Mute, and it uses the accelerometer in your phone so that when you flip the phone face down, it automatically mutes and silences the incoming
call.
That's
awesome.
It is,
yeah,
right?
That, and, really is not that useful, but that is so important.
No. I know.
Why do you think it's called
It's just
RD
one of those small
mute.
Things. I don't know. I guess maybe RD might be the function
redirect?
Maybe, or the ringer or something.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't know, but
ringer
yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
And it's nice because it's a back-end service, so you don't have to have like the application running all the time. Now, I have been running, I just about midweek upgraded my Evo to Cyanogen Mod 7. RC, the release candidate on the 16th. Dude, man, digging the gingerbread. It's not like it's not answering all my complaints about Android, but it's definitely a little peppier and it's more polished. They've honestly, it's a little more Windows 7-ish, like the text and stuff, and it's a little flatter of an interface. But I'm pretty sure, unless this is Cyanogen that did this, they've integrated that flip to mute function.
Really?
So so if you have gingerbread, you can flip to mute out of the box.
Like that.
The other thing they integrated is SIP internet calling integrated into the dialer. So when you press call, instead of going out over the CDMA antenna on my Evo, it goes out over the Wi-Fi using SIP. And I linked that up to my Google Voice account so I can retake and receive calls over Wi-Fi on my Evo. I found the quality kind of sucks. I only did about 3 calls and I gave up because the latency was good. In fact, dude, check this out. Over SIP, my phone would actually ring before. Because on Google Voice, all of my phones ring, you know? And so on cell, my cell phone would always kind of be like the last phone to pick up. My house phone would ring first, things like that. But over SIP, that Evo is ringing before pretty much anything else is.
That's
it's pretty interesting
cool.
How much faster that is. But unfortunately, the call quality wasn't very good. And then the people on the other end complained about echo and stuff like
lame.
That. I don't know if there was something I could have tweaked, but I turned off the internet calling in gingerbread. It just wasn't
working. Lame, because I like that idea a lot.
Hey, I mentioned really quick that you can go to jblive.am, you know? Well, jblive.am redirects to jupiterbroadcasting.com/listen, and that's our 24/7 audio stream. And I want to say a big thanks to Tommy Braun. He's in the Jupiter Colony chat room, or a Jupiter Colony forum as Navon, and he made us a very nice live stream. Yeah, dude, and you know what's awesome is it renders well on the desktop web browser, but it also rocks on a mobile device, pretty much all.
So you have pretty much any mobile device. You can listen to us on the go all the time. Mm-hmm. You will never be devoid of Jupiter Broadcasting.
So that's jblive.am to
that's
glorious.
Stream
that. And if you're on Android, I've recommended Stream Furious in the past to
which works.
Out.
I hear.
So there you go.
That's what I hear.
I hear. It
that's
works
what
great.
I hear.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey,
what's
that?
Wait, Chris. What's going on right now?
Brian.
What?
Brian.
What's going on? Yeah.
Brian.
Yeah.
Let's do the news.
Wait a minute. No, don't stop recording, Chris. Don't stop recording. You reached your hand over.
No, I switched to you.
All right, well, I have a correction to make. You may remember previously on the Linux Action Show, and by previously, I mean around 4.5 to 6 minutes ago, we said that this was episode 7 of season 14. I have been informed by the internet that this is, in fact,
we made a boo-boo.
Incorrect. It is season 15, episode 7.
Yeah.
I am terribly, terribly mistaken. You see, here's the thing. I'm tired. and I got it wrong. That's all I got.
It's a hard job, man. You know, because you got to remember two different sets of numbers every single week,
guys. You don't know how hard that is. This is what I do. No, I do. I have to every week remember what episode it is and say it. Do you know how hard that is for me?
At the same time. It's really rough, man.
The other thing is, you should note the journalistic integrity of the Linux Action Show. As soon as we get something wrong, boom, we screwed up. In fact, we will be the first to admit how retarded we are from time to time. So therefore, when we say things and we don't mention how retarded we're being, you should probably take it as gospel truth and not question it at all. And then what you should do is you should go and just yell.
And just assume it's true.
All the other Linux podcasts out there. You just yell at them. Call them up. Send them emails. All in caps. Like, why are you guys not the Linux Action Show? Just all in caps. I mean, and I want it to be pages of pages of all in caps. I don't want punctuation unless it's an exclamation mark. I don't want commas. I don't want.
This is going to be a trade race.
Just all in caps.
Oh God.
All right, Brian.
Should we talk about our first story on the news docket? What do you think?
All right.
What do you think?
Hey, Chris.
I mean, we're gonna be drowned now in hate. Yeah.
Let's do the news. Oh wait, we already did that part.
All right, Brian. Brian, I'll tell you our top story on the news docket for this week. Now, here we go, man. Banshee versus Ubuntu. It's hit the wall, the S officially. Canonical contacted the Banshee folks and said, look, for the addition we're going to include in the Ubuntu desktop, we're going to need to disable the Amazon store.
Huh.
Or you can give us a 75% cut.
What's a big cut? 75% is a big cut.
And here's the extra salt in the wound. So Banshee makes its money from the Amazon affiliate, just like our Amazon affiliate store. And the reality is that's just not a lot of money.
No, you don't make a lot off
so
that.
So a 75% cut of that would literally be pennies that you would get.
Nothing.
And so in 2010, I want to say there's probably the exact figure is here in the... Yeah, here it is. In 2010, the Banshee project raised $3,000 for GNOME.
Dude,
for the GNOME project.
That's Banshee
selling through their Amazon affiliate store. And now remember, Banshee is made by Novell.
Right.
And Novell had an internal conversation, a dialogue, and they said, okay, we can make some revenue off this affiliate business.
But it's so little.
Do we want... Yeah, I know. So why don't we be good guys and we'll give it to the GNOME project? Because we're building our part of our business, not all of our business, but we're building a large part of our business.
On the success
or a significant
of that
part
project.
Off of GNOME.
Yeah, totally yeah, Banshee, makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. It's an ecosystem that they were supporting.
Yep.
So... that's where it's a little extra bit of a dagger, right? Because people are looking at this and they're going, well, Canonical's already switching away from GNOME a lot.
And now they're trying to pull money away from GNOME is how people are looking at it.
That's how people are looking at it.
That's really rough. I don't know why Canonical is doing that. That's just such a horrible PR move. It's just so bad.
There's no good PR out
of this. Like maybe they just didn't think it through. You know what I mean? Maybe they didn't research it. Maybe they just saw it and they're like, man, Nokia is trying to make a ton of money. We're not going to make money Novell. Sorry, it's early.
Yeah.
There I go. I corrected myself. I'm not going to correct myself
the rest of the show,
which means everything I say from here forward is correct. So, 100%. So they're like, oh, Novell's making a bunch of money. So let's say, you know what, they have to take it out if we want to put Banshee here in Ubuntu. Maybe they just thought that, didn't look into it any further, and just called
it
good. I doubt it.
Here's where I could see it. You know, here's where it seems like it's going from the standpoint of, look, Canonical doesn't have a lot of solid revenue streams, right? So you figure
they need everything.
They're trying to push Ubuntu One. They're trying to push their music store, and they're trying to say, "Look, we're building this Linux desktop. We're spending, you know, Mark Shuttleworth is spending millions on the Ubuntu project, or has spent. He could have gone to space, is the way he's looking at it. With his
again,
he's already gone once. He's got the connections. You know, he could go again if he wanted to, but instead he's spending on Ubuntu. And he says, "Look, I'm not spending my hard-earned space dollars on Ubuntu so to have a competitor come in and put their store in there and make a buck off of me." Right? Because think about the man hours they put into developing Ubuntu just to have another company come in and put their product in there to make money. But at the same time, when you're building a general purpose operating system, you're building a platform for other people to come in on and
use. No, but see, on the same token, though, you don't see... You would never see, you know, Microsoft or Apple allowing, a media player come in and... Well, no, that's not true. That's not true. Microsoft has to allow OEMs to bundle, like, you know, Music Match and all the various third-party jukeboxes, like 3.0.
They have to let OEMs do that. Yeah,
but they themselves are not bundling those things in give other people revenue. So I kind of see where Canonical's coming from. But on the same token, the net effect of what they're accomplishing is just pulling money away from GNOME. For no good reason. I mean, a couple thousand bucks, it means it's not going to make or break Canonical. That's not going to allow Canonical to hire a bunch of new devs. That's not even going to allow Canonical to hire a bunch of new devs in, you know, a third world country. So why, after the management overhead anyway, so why do it? It just seems like it's just kind of a jerk move almost. My guess is, honestly, they're going to rethink this. Because
I think so, too. And it's the weekend, and there probably just hasn't been an official statement made
yet. No one's
been
in the office.
Now, the trans argument to that might be that, you know, Apple and Microsoft ship Windows Media Player and iTunes respectively. And, you know, they have full control over the music store that shows up in there. The difference in this scenario is a different set of open source developers are making this project. So they're dictating the terms for an open source project if they want to be included. After just being switched over to the default media player for Ubuntu, like, that was a huge win for them.
Yeah.
And that was like this might make the difference, you know, kind of a thing. This might be the breaking point where Banshee could get, you know, takes over Rhythmbox and becomes like a solid second place to ArmRock or something like that, you know? And now because of these actions, they're blocking some of that traction. Now, it doesn't sound like the Banshee project was making their money off of that anyways, but the GNOME was.
Maybe with Banshee as default on the most popular distro out there, maybe those numbers would skyrocket. You know, I mean, we're talking pretty massive numbers with Ubuntu as a distro.
Exactly, it could make a big difference. That's my point. You know, with that affiliate, if the Ubuntu desktop, it would take a while for everyone to get to the rev of Ubuntu that has Banshee. But once it got there, that could be some significant revenue that gets generated for GNOME.
Speaking of which, I have to say this. This is, you know, a totally off topic. You mentioned, you know, how long it'll take for people to get to the latest rev. It amazes me, considering that all these distros have 6-month release cycles, how far behind so many Linux users are in those release cycles. I mean, I know that we're always updating to the latest and greatest because that's what our job. You know, that's what we got to do. We're as soon as a new alpha comes out, we're installing it. But, you know, like when, let's say, you know, Ubuntu 10.10. It's been out for a little while now. It's a good release. You know what I mean? It's quality. A lot of people like it. I know so many people that are still like on 9.04 or even earlier.
Yeah.
So many people. I know. People that listen to this show. And it absolutely boggles my mind. Which think about it for a second. I mean, Linux users really are not upgrading that rapidly. You know what I mean? They're sticking to some of the older distros, at least like a year or so older. If that's the case, why on earth are the distros releasing new releases every 6 months when the users aren't really upgrading that fast?
I guess a certain segment is, and it's the goal to push forward, but
it just boggles
you know, keep
my
things
mind.
Moving. It is pretty interesting. It is interesting, especially when you see it. You could expect it from an enterprise
chat room level. Majo, cough, still on 8.04 for my desktop. It's a hassle to upgrade.
That's just it. You get it working.
You get it working,
right?
And you stick
and
with
some
it.
Some people just
8.04. Yeah, if you think about those, that's 3 years old. That's a 3 year old machine right there. I mean that. I mean, for OS wise, that's pure insanity, man. I can't even fathom it.
You're missing out on a lot of new drivers. You're missing out on a lot of performance enhancements, I would assume. And a lot of new libraries.
Yeah, so back to the whole Banshee thing. Canonical should not be doing that. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and just say that they didn't think it through. They didn't really process this. And you know what? I bet you come this next week, they'll yank it. You know,
can I just make a side point?
I'll probably yell at them next week. So
I know. Can I just, the side point I'd like to make, though, is... I got to just make a full disclaimer. I'm just a dude on the internet. I don't know any of the business side. I don't know any of the contract side, revenue split, stuff like that. But let's be honest. A music store to make your revenue? And when you've got iTunes and you've got Amazon MP3 and Magnatune and eMusic and all these services, a music store, and then to... come on. When everybody heard they're doing a music store, everybody went... Okay, I'll do it to support them. Okay.
Yeah, but it was we did a lot of shrugging. Yeah.
And so now, to sort of fire this torpedo into the hornet's nest when you already are on the verge of upsetting people, which Canonical always seems to be walking that line anyway, so maybe they're just used to it. But you fire a torpedo into the hornet's nest over something that I think a lot of people don't see a long-term future in anyway. So it's almost like you're just screwing the pooch for the pride principle of the matter or something. Yeah. I don't know. And that's where I'm getting the disconnect because... And unless they get some sort of fantastic revenue split. But my understanding is the music in the Ubuntu One Music Store is not owned by Canonical. It's also an affiliate cross-licensing deal from a music platform provider.
It's a platform. It's a provider that's, I believe, over in the UK. We talked about it when the Ubuntu One Music Store first shipped. But yeah, it's just an average music store seller. I mean, it's similar to just going through Amazon, really. So you can't figure they're getting much more than just a couple of percentage points off of each sale. And while that's great, if someone goes in and buys, just a crap ton of albums all at once and, enough, millions of people do that, you gotta figure people are already so invested into purchasing from Amazon or iTunes, or they've got, a Rhapsody account or something along those lines, or they're just dedicated to only music that's Creative Commons and they only go through, all those sources. So,
well, and let's be fair too. I mean, wouldn't you want from an Ubuntu music store, and I know they just simply can't do it because the provider doesn't offer it, but if you want an Ubuntu music store, don't you want your audio in OGG?
Yeah.
If you're getting it DRM-free anyways, why don't you... It's kind of like... Wouldn't it be like going to a convention where it's all gadgets and everything takes C batteries and all they have there is D batteries? Yeah. I mean, it's like it doesn't fit with the with the expectations of the consumer.
They just didn't think it through. It's
well, or it's just not capable to provide it. Yeah, I understand that. But I guess I'm just kind of doubting the whole music service to begin with. And so it just doesn't seem like it's worth...
When I look at Canonical's Ubuntu One Music Store, I honestly don't see them as thinking, oh, we're going to make $1 billion off of the music store. I see them as thinking, we're going to use the music store as a means to make more money off of the Ubuntu One service itself. So you sign up for the Ubuntu One service, you get additional cloud storage. Sure. When you purchase music through the Ubuntu One Music Store, it automatically syncs with your cloud storage pool. So it automatically shoves it into your remote drive there, which means that you're more likely to fill it up and more likely to want to increase the amount you pay for Ubuntu One to get additional storage.
And
from that point
of
view,
to be fair, that's where the Ubuntu One Music Store has its leg up too, for convenience. That Ubuntu One total music syncing between your machines, the ability to stream it to mobile devices using the Ubuntu One application, is a total package that Amazon MP3, for example, doesn't offer, but I can also solve that same problem by just downloading my Amazon MP3s into my Dropbox, which is what I do now too.
I purchase my music and I throw it in my Dropbox, which is really no different. But they're combining it all together, so I kind of get that. So I'm okay with all of that. You know what? We've talked to death about what formats they should support in the store. That's fine.
You're right.
But really, I think the bigger thing here is, there's been so much scrutiny on Canonical over the last year, especially about them supporting their upstream distros, really giving back to the Debian project, really giving back to GNOME, and people really criticizing how well Canonical has done that, and justifiably in some cases. So for them to come out and do something like this, even if they didn't even really think about this, even if this was just a quick little move made by someone low on the totem pole that was just a mistake. Yeah. It's a way larger blunder than it should be because of everything else. So now I'm looking at it and not only are they not from the average layperson, if I was just an average Linux user / open source zealoty kind of guy, I'm looking at it, I'm like, great. So Canonical doesn't get back to GNOME, doesn't get back to Debian, and now they're stealing money from GNOME.
And
that's how it feels to people. So they've got to come out. They've got to get in front of the train. They've got to be Superman, put their hand out, stop the train from hitting the nuclear power plant because for some reason they laid train tracks that ran straight into the nuclear power plant. So they have to stop that right away, and they need to do it.
You know what's crazy, though, dude, is they keep building these train tracks into these nuclear power plants, and then, they go away for a couple of days. They are operating at a company that's, the size of Jupiter Broadcasting, with the world that's looking at them and not at all in the same scope as a Microsoft and an Apple, But when you start getting into these services, you start people start looking at you in that way, and you've got to start playing in that 24/7 PR game, because this literally could have been some sort of, hey, Banshee, we're thinking about doing this, and then like somebody exploded on a mailing list and went and wrote blog posts and spun it way more than it is.
Right.
And because nobody at Canonical stepping up and going, wait a minute, Rationality Police, can we talk about this? They're just like, oh, hey, I think some stuff's going on in Twitter. I'll get to that on Monday, maybe after I have lunch.
It really is what it is, isn't it?
And then because they don't get to it, it makes it on shows like this that's seen by hundreds of thousands of Linux users, which is their core audience.
Chris.
And I don't get why they keep screwing
Chris, up. Hundreds of thousands, please. Millions and bajillions of Linux users. Millions of Linux users by 8 a.m. Monday morning. Yeah.
So they got to stop acting like a small company.
Yeah, they do.
And I don't know if maybe Mark Shuttleworth needs to go back up into space and jump up on top of Mir before it hits. Oh, wait, it's already done.
Here's the thing, though. It's not just got to get up there and send a message. Acting like a small company, because hell, I'm a small company. But here's the thing. Yeah. A small company is always connected. If you only have, let's say, a three-person company, which turns out Canonical has much, much more than that, you have people that are working on the weekends. You have people who are
trying to make things great. And Kotoki saying, well, Chris, you're acting like you know Canonical. You don't really know what's going on there in the chat room. But the reality is I'm witnessing the end result. The actions are speaking louder than words at this point. Maybe somebody's out there at Canonical saying, wait a minute, this is BS, or wait a minute, here's our position. Yes, it's true, but here's our side. I'm not seeing that, and I follow the Linux news like an SOB. And if somebody who's has got filters set up and searches set up and digs through the news all the time isn't seeing the response from Canonical, they're screwing up.
Yeah.
Just like they screwed up at the launch of the App Store, now they're screwing this up. And just because they're not talking to people.
Honestly, and this may sound stupid to everybody, there should be a press release on it. Yeah. I mean, I know everyone's like, most people look at the ideas of press releases and it sounds hokey and corporate and lame, but the reality is a press release can be for anything. You can literally be like, oh, guys, we misquoted a time somewhere. This is the new information, press release. It's not for everyone to read. It's for people like us to read, sift through it, and present to you guys if it's actually interesting or important. So really, they can release a press release in like half an hour. They can really crank those out fast. And I know you got to get approval through, your bosses and your head honchos and whatnot. But come on, if they're head honchos of a company and there's a big problem going on, you toss them an email, you give them a quick call and be like, hey, can you look this press release over real quick? They'll say, yeah, it looks fine, whatever.
Yeah.
Hang up the phone on you and get back to their golf game where they're, playing golf with diamonds or whatever it is they're doing. And you just email out the press release and you're done. That would have solved the issue. So that
here's,
is a problem.
Here's a perfect example, Brian. Here's Canonical at Canonical on Twitter. They have 36 followers and
that's
zero
tweets.
That's
not really Canonical's account, is it?
I don't know, man. But if it's not, they
can
contact Twitter.
What about like Adubuntu? Is that's a real account?
I never pay
attention to what the actual Twitter.
So, name, but it doesn't matter because if you're legitimate and somebody's taking your name, Twitter lets you contact them if you're a business and take it back.
Oh, that's true.
So here's at Ubuntu. It has 529 followers and zero
really?
Tweets. Yes. It's not, this is not an Ubuntu
that's
account.
That's a guy. That's a dude.
Yeah. I know. But I'm just saying that's at Ubuntu. But, my point is it would literally take them 30 seconds to write a tweet that says, hey guys, we're looking into this. Stay tuned for more information.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know if the story is exactly right. Just stay tuned, and that's all you got to do.
That's all you got
to
do.
Even if you can't manage to write a two paragraph.
But my guess is this will all be blown over next week. It's no big deal. They're not going to actually do that.
Yeah.
It just turns out it was some mistake by somebody, and Canonical just really got behind the PR game, forgot to let people know what they were really thinking, let stuff get way out of control that didn't need to, and then by next weekend, we'll just kind of laugh it off and maybe poke a little fun at Canonical for not being on their PR game, but that's about it. That's my guess on it.
Right.
If I'm wrong on that, boy, am I going to yell next week, but that's my guess. It's no big deal. It happens. Every company makes mistakes. I'll cut them some slack on that. So
on the plus side, dude, maybe if they're lucky, the internet will cease to exist next week, and then they won't have to figure out how to communicate with people. And problem solved. All right, let's move on to the next story because it's kind of a good one. It comes from Grokla.
You snarky bastard. That was fantastic.
I know. You remember Grokla covered the Novell and
Sko.
What's their name?
Sko.
Gosh, wow. Sko, the Novell Sko.
Yeah, and we tried to get the person that will not be named from Grokla on the show.
Yeah.
And that person, I do not believe exists. We went round and
I'm
round
starting
with that
to believe
person.
You.
That person, that certain individual that goes by initials, that may or may not be a woman. We don't know who this person is, but that person refuses to comment on stories, to go on shows, to do anything.
Right.
Yep.
Doesn't want to make a public appearance.
Yep.
But Grokla has a story. It's essentially boils down to Google has filed for a motion to dismiss Oracle's copyright claim against Android and the stolen code. B-Man, do you happen to have this up here? Do you want to give a shot for the reading the title of this sucker? It's I don't even know if I would be able to
All
get
right.
it. All
right. I'm going to try to read this very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. This is not easy. Here we go.
No.
Google files motion for leave to file motion for summary judgment on Oracle's copyright claim. Update 2X's judge says not yet. Well, that settles it right there, ladies and gentlemen. You don't even need to read the article because that is the title that you've just gotten, and you now have all the information you'll ever need because obviously we all immediately know exactly what this is about.
So here's how I summarize that headline. Here's how I wrote it. You want to know how I wrote it? Google files summary judgment on Oracle's copyright claims. Oh. That's how I wrote it.
Well, no. But, that doesn't make sense because what you said was accurate and what was in the article.
Right,
no,
right.
Chris,
I boiled it down
again,
to the headline.
Google files motion for leave to file motion for summary judgment on Oracle's copyright claim. Update 2X.
Now, in Grokla's defense, though, I actually think that might be the appropriate legalese. See, here's the what they call the doc entry, motion for leave to file motion. So that's kind of interesting. But Oracle has already responded, and the judge has already responded saying, no, it's too soon. You know what Google's, here, I'll read you what Google says. This is directly from Google's statement filed with the court. Oracle's allegations are that Android copies portions of certain basic functional Java application programming interfaces, or APIs, which are interfaces consisting of common names of Java programming language constructs, methods of operations, commands, and other function elements. The use in Android of such common and unprotectable elements is purely functional, namely to enable applications written in Java programming to run on Android devices and to enable programs created by developers for the Android platform to interoperate with existing third-party Java-based software tools. Such use cannot constitute copyright infringement as a matter of law. Mm. So they're saying the similarities are simply there for compatibility.
Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, it's... Yeah. Honestly, Google's probably right on that.
We'll see. It's the judge doesn't necessarily agree so far, but it's all early days. Yeah. This could still end up badly for Google, where they're going to have to pay a significant chunk of every. I don't know where that would come from.
Man.
It's not like Google makes
that's
going to
be rough because they only make so many gajillions of dollars from advertising and stealing our information. So man,
and poor Oracle, right? Oh. Oracle's hard up for the money too these days. I maintain the allegation that when Sun sold to Oracle, there was a tease in there that this lawsuit was gonna be ripe for the taking to make
does
back
this,
the
Does this
costs.
Feel like two Monopoly guys with little monocles that are both worth $10 bajillion are fighting over a $20 dinner check?
Well, and dude,
it's just honestly, it's asinine that they're just like fighting over this little scrap of a morsel. And I'm sure to us, the money that this will be, you know, for is like... If I all of a sudden got the ability to, to find Google for that much, I'm going after a tooth and nail. I don't care how right I am because I want those billions of dollars. But for them, it's going to be like it's nothing. And it's just bad PR. And honestly, the bad PR would probably be offset by the money. So it'd probably be a net wash. So,
I know. The truth of the matter is all of this stuff, all of these Java, things that are copyrighted and all this stupid crap is created by engineers who sat down and wrote this stuff. And now you've got, the stereotypical corporate white guy who is trying to make a buck off of something that
with
don't
a monocle.
Even understand.
With a monocle.
Absolutely, dude. And probably
don't
a top
forget
hat,
the monocle.
I would imagine. Okay. I won't. Now, I want to talk about this next story because I think it's a little indication of the future.
I don't know if you guys hear this right now, but my child absolutely agrees with what we're saying. She's absolutely frustrated by Oracle's move here, and she feels like Google's being a baby about it as well. So she agrees. Absolutely.
Okay.
She is only two weeks old, and she agrees.
She's really on the ball, man.
My little Josie's got it together. That's all I'm saying.
Look at this story straight out of the future, Brian. This came out of Mobile World Conference. VMware Android handset virtualization is real. It exists. And there was a demo at Mobile World Conference of VMware running on an Android phone.
About time. Because, I mean, you remember they announced this stuff like 2 years ago.
I still don't get it. I mean, here's their pitch.
When they released it back then, they were like, man, look, you can run Windows Mobile 6.5 on this other platform.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was what they announced like two some years ago. We covered it on the show. And
I know. I remember talking about it.
But now it actually kind of works. That's kind of cool.
I kind of can see it for running legacy applications and operating systems. But they're at Mobile World pushing it to run Android on Android.
I don't know if I understand that.
What they claim is that corporate, you know, enterprises want to have a completely locked down and controlled phone, and now people are merging their personal lives and their business lives on these devices that they can just lose.
I see.
So I think this works in like a little bit of some sort of DRM where you can remotely nuke the virtual environment if the phone's lost and all of the stuff contained in that virtual environment is then protected. So they're launching, if you're watching the video version right now, they just launched up VMware on this Android device. It looks like a slightly older version of Android, maybe like a Android 2 or 1.6, something like that in the VM. But what they say is, so in here we have Hale and their corporate calendar all set up. And now when they go in there, they're in their corporate world. And then when they close it, they're in their personal phone.
You know what's weird? On the video, they don't seem to really touch it much.
I noticed that.
They just launch it. And we know, it could be essentially just a static picture. I have yet to see it move.
I'll jump ahead. Maybe he does something.
I've seen it move, dude.
Yeah, you know, I'm 2 minutes into the video and they never actually touch. Oh, wait. Oh, there it goes. There you go.
Did it move?
There it is.
Did it move?
It did finally move. Well, all he did, he brought up the menu launcher.
Well, that's a something. Was it fast?
That is something.
Was it peppy?
It's tough to say because it's an older version of Android.
Yeah.
It seems like he's tapping an icon and it's actually crashing.
That's what it seems like, doesn't it?
It's crashing.
Exit button. Anyway, it seems a little hokey to me. And honestly, I don't see this going anywhere. Because do you see companies actually spending the time to set up a secure virtual environment for people to have their phones, which you're going to have to run on a specific class of phones, I'm sure.
Right. And probably kill battery.
I'm just not seeing that. It's kind of cool. I dig it. I'm glad they did it. Because that's
rude, honestly, corporate America is slow with this stuff. You know what I see the most common right now is users with an iPhone or an Android and then a BlackBerry for work.
Yep.
I see that all the time.
That's how it works. Now, if they came out and they said, here, you know, here's an Android phone and here's a virtual environment that you can run, you know, WebOS and a couple other OSs in, now
cool.
I'm interested.
And for devs, right?
Hell,
that could be cool.
Ubuntu or OpenSUSE, run a full desktop class
system
in there. Even if it's an ARM-based desktop, you know, full distro, sure, why not? That would be glorious.
Yeah. That would be great, especially for testing, for troubleshooting, and things like that. So I could see the advantages to it. I don't know if I see what their angle is.
I don't get the corporate thing, but everything else sounds groovy. So
hey, that's where all the money is.
Way
right?
to go, VMware, for making something that seems pretty cool.
Something that people will probably.
My voice went up at the end there.
That means it's something.
That's right.
Now the last week was, you know, we talked a lot about the happenstance around Nokia dumping Mego, essentially. Yeah.
By the way, still a little sore about that.
Yeah.
Last week I was cranky. This week, less cranky, just kind of like sore. Like I got into a fight with someone and now I'm still hurting and looking around, licking my wounds a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't quite sit like you like to sit and you have to lay a little differently. No. It's not quite as comfortable.
I'm sitting on a donut right now. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Wait. I think that implies a certain type of fight.
Nope, it does not.
Now, Nokia might have done you wrong, Brian, but Intel's coming along and they're rubbing your back because they're saying, we're still committed to Mego despite Nokia's defection.
Whichever.
And I say good for you. Intel's coming out and they're saying, we're still planning to ship hardware. We're still planning to go with the Mego on a mobile platform. Here's a preview of the interface, which kind of got a little pooped on. But they said later on, they said, look, we can kind of understand why Nokia did what they did. They're kind of in a tough spot. And I don't know if this is kind of a dig, but the Intel CEO said, I understand they just couldn't afford to stick with Mego. They couldn't stick it out. But, you know, I think a lot of people are now saying, Nokia, you just kissed your ecosystem goodbye, right?
They have no control over things end-to-end.
That's the big thing now is that's how Android and that's how iPhone and that's how WebOS is going to have to compete. is ecosystems, music stores, app stores, video stores,
they're earning revenue.
Social integration, yeah. Ad revenue, all this stuff, all of which Microsoft is the furthest behind everyone. I bet even RIM's going to be able to catch up faster.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Because technically, I was saying this on the live stream before the show, technically Microsoft had a music store and a video store before iTunes ever even launched, right? And then iTunes launched, and it's like they put a rocket pack on, and they blasted past Microsoft, and now they have 5x the content, 5x the applications, 5x the size of the ecosystem.
So it's totally possible for a smaller player to hop in and just dominate the space in like a year's time. It's totally possible.
The problem is when you're hitched to Microsoft, they're just not moving.
Well, that's not entirely fair. Like I'm not a huge.
They're moving, but they move too slow. They're 2 years too late.
They
all
do
the
move
time.
Slow, but I mean, come on. At least like look at it this way. We all know that their whole Windows Phone 7 thing, they started it kind of late, right? They started it way late, and they started it as like a stopgap measure. And when they released it fast, and honestly, it is. Even if we disagree with some of the aspects of it, it is a fairly impressive little setup. So that's
but cool. It's impressive for what smartphones did 2 years ago, and I really mean that. It doesn't multitask. It doesn't copy and paste. It doesn't have a lot of features. It doesn't even do multiple calendars correctly.
No, that's
you know
that's,
it's
that's
just
true.
It's too far behind, and it's got 8,000 applications total.
Yeah, but see,
versus Android's like 100,000 and Apple's. Whatever.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. You're right on that. I don't know. It's there's
see,
worse
the thing,
things
though.
To do. I honestly think.
Sure. Oh, there's worse decisions they could have made. But I you got to wonder. You got Intel saying we're sticking with MeeGo. Another company came out and said we're going to develop this splash top based on MeeGo. We're going to have all these hardware devices. If MeeGo can sort of have a mini Android effect, where because it's open, it can just sort of explode like Android did, then the applications will start arriving and momentum will be built, and Nokia is and that could happen in by the end of this year, and Nokia will just be shipping their first Windows phone at the end of this year.
You know what's really, really crazy? There was actually a press release this last week from basically from the group of individuals or the group of developers that work on a lot of those open platforms that we talked about last week. If you haven't watched last week's episode, go watch or listen to last week's episode where we talked about, you know, like Mare and SHR and all these variety of cool little mobile platforms that you can put on phones. Some in development, some not in development everywhere, some pretty great. But there was a little press release from them say, hey, you know, with everything that's going on, now's the time to get behind your community-driven mobile platform. And here's some great ones. Like, it literally just, it kind of was like they watched our show, quoted it a little bit, and put it out as a press release, which was great. But what amazed me was nobody paid attention. And you'd almost think, like the Gizmodos and the Engadgets and all those other people in the world would have taken a look at that and said, hey, well, if nothing else, this is interesting that there is this groundswell of movement to get these amazing open source platforms on the mobile devices from their community driven. Because some of them are downright impressive. Some of them are hunks of junk, but some of them
I was impressed by Mir, and
really
I think it has some
impressive.
Potential.
And
exactly.
What amazed me was nobody noticed. The news outlets just didn't care, which tells you something. People want big companies to build their phones, to put an OS on it. They don't want to flash their ROM. They don't want to do all that stuff. Tech journalists, even the tech journalists over at Engadget and Gizmodo and everywhere else, those are two of the big ones, but you know, there's others. They don't really want to do it either. All they want to do is they want HTC to give them a brand new Android phone. They want, you know, a cool new iPhone from Apple, and they want to play around with it and install Angry Birds on it, call it good and go home. And to me, that is so terribly sad, because there is such cool gear out there with some amazing software available, and it's like the whole tech world is missing it. They're missing out on all of it, and that sucks.
You know, I would say I completely know what you're saying. Going from looking at it from the power user perspective, going with a rooted Android device, you know, it's now if the next Android device I buy, it is a requirement that there's already a community out there that is supplying ROMs and supplying the ability to root it, because I don't want to be locked down. The fact that I don't get administrative rights over my own device seems crazy to me.
It's
exactly
nuts.
And I was talking with you on instant message the other day, and I thought, you know, if we would have looked at this, 5 years ago, the idea that all these manufacturers are selling these completely locked down devices that I have zero control over is if we were early in the PC era and Compaq and IBM were coming out with machines like this, you know, they had some early lockdown ROMs and firmwares, but all that stuff was worked out, and you wouldn't have had the PCs explode like they did if they were all locked down like this. So you need that open.
We would have been furious.
It would have been
in full on nerd rage mode.
It would have been abuse of the consumer. It would have been unheard
and,
of.
And nowadays, when you know, our tablets and our phones constitutes, like, especially our phones, like 90% of the computing people tend to do on a day to day basis, at least the power users. Mm-hmm. Why on earth would we ever put up with being that constricted, that restricted? And you know, it's terrible. And it's not just DRM, it's just the entire platform. It's the whole things are just so locked down. We have so little choice in the matter. And it's not about freedom of open source software. It's about freedom to just tinker. It's about freedom to own the device you own. And it bothers me. But what it bothers me
is it's about the freedom to learn.
What bothers me the most, because we have some great open source under a variety of licenses, mobile platforms that we can play with. Some of them that are really modern and amazing. I mean, hell, MAME 05 is still a great OS and is right there. We can use it. Amigo is right there. It still exists. We can use it.
Right.
It works right now. It may need a few drivers for a few phones, but it works. It's there.
Right.
Now, what amazes me and what upsets me is that the tech journalist world doesn't care. Because people aren't finding out about these things. We know about them, and a lot of our listeners know about them, because we're not just the power users, but we're like the developers, and we're like the, to use the word zealots, but we're
people
like really in it. You know, we are involved with it. But the rest of the world, the other 99.9%, they've never heard of any of these things.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, granted, not all of them are going to flock to it, but maybe 5%. And you know what? 5% is a lot of damn people.
You know what I worry about, Brian? I it sounds corny, but I'm actually serious. I worry about the children. And when I say that is, I spent some time. I know it sounds stupid, right? It does sound stupid. I laugh.
All right, continue. But that sounds ridiculous.
I spent
some time. Go call Stevie Wonder, have him make a song for you.
I know, right? I spent some time, like a year ago, working for a school district, and what I walked away with. Because that was the same school district that I went to school with, you know, years and years ago. And I walked away with the realization that the students there, for the vast majority, much, much, much vaster majority than when I was in school, don't care about technology. Yeah. They literally, to them, it's not fascinating anymore. It's an appliance object. And I believe it is the iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch-ization of kids' playtime. They all, and the reason I can say this is because in order for them to get on the network, I had to add their MAC address to our DHCP server. They all have iPods and iPhones, and they're all locked down. They don't have the option to discover and tinker.
It sucks.
And that's the reason I could discover and tinker is the reason I'm sitting here now doing a podcast
honestly,
with you.
It goes even further than that. It's the reason that you can earn a good living now. It's the reason that your skills are desired by the corporate America to accomplish the iPadization. Apple could not pull off what they're pulling off if people our age and you know within that range we're not able to tinker around with you know DOS and Unix and you know their Amigas and their Commodore 64s and really just get into the guts of things, play around with it, and break their machines.
All the devices we have today that are these new mobile platforms that are locked down are directly benefiting from the evolution of the computer industry that took place in this spot where anybody could come up with a language. Anybody could write an application in any language. Would Objective-C be around if we didn't have that ability? Would we have evolved to Objective-C for application development?
Honestly, I can make an argument that we really shouldn't have anyway.
Oh, I agree. I agree, and that's true, but that's what happens in an open market.
It's great. Lots and lots of cool things. Everything from
and because
pop,
of that, that's why you don't use Objective-C on Android, and that's why you don't use Objective-C on Windows Mobile or RIM devices. You have options. Yeah. But if we were in a locked down ecosystem world, you wouldn't have an option. And how do we get those options back?
Honestly,
and I think it's these open platforms you're talking about.
Open platforms combined with the power of things like Gumsticks as a platform. There's a couple of other open platforms. What's that one? Was it Bug? Something Bug. You remember what I'm talking about? The little modular computing thing.
The one we just covered last week,
like
I've already forgotten.
A couple months back, we talked about it again.
Oh, okay.
But I'll find a link and put it in the forum. But anyway, so I just dropped my pen on the floor. That's what happens. I got all excited, and I start flipping my pen around, and I drop stuff.
I understand.
So, so there are options. So, like, there are options out there, such as GumSticks. There are great mobile open platforms, you know, a variety of Linux-based platforms, but there are others as well that we can put on them. We can build our own phones. We can build our own tablets. We can build our own portable devices that are, hell, made out of wood. Hell, taped together with electrical tape on the inside. Just put some duct tape that, like, some that blue, shiny duct tape on the outside, and it's just rocking awesome.
I kind of would like that.
There's so many things that we can still do, that the kids can still do, but no one talks about it. No one knows about it. People don't, you don't see all the big magazines. You don't see like a Byte magazine coming out and say, you know, hey, you can do this amazing, cool stuff. What you see is them, you know,
the new iPhone
apps are out. Oh my gosh. Is Apple going to release a new iPhone update? Oh, is Gingerbread going to be for tablets or phones? Oh, we don't know. But man, we better sit on pins and needles waiting to find out which specific revision of this Java interpreter we get to run on our phone, but not put our own apps on. I mean, there's just so much stuff that it does not drive us to create. It doesn't drive us to do anything exciting.
Right. It drives us to have someone else create.
And honestly, and this is where we're at a point where the nerds of the world, I mean, the real nerds, not the nerds walking around, pushing, Android. I'm just going to be honest here. Android is not the answer. Android is part of the problem. Because Android, while sitting on top of a Linux kernel, doesn't really promote that tinkering, that enterprising spirit of trying to learn, trying to break, trying to make something new. What we need is we need people to sit down and we need to make a stand right now and just say, you know what? We're going to run some really crappy distros for a while. We're just going to say, you know what? Let's try three or four of these, you know, community-driven, Linux-powered for the most part, some BSD-powered distros for mobile devices, get on board with them, make them great, and you know what? And make it clear to the journalists of the world, to the Engadgets of the world, that we are going to actually run this stuff, that people are interested in this, that it
people
should
care.
Be covered. Then they'll cover it, and then CNN will cover it, and they'll be like, ha, 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 I know you all have an iPhone, but some people who have long beards and live in a basement are trying this stuff. And it's fine. At least then it would be coverage, and that's what we need.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's
just the point we're at, and it frustrates me that we're not there. But there are great stuff, and honestly, over the next couple of months, we really need to spend time, us on this show, the other Linux shows out there, the Linux websites out there, really talking about promoting, reviewing all of those various options, because this is
we got to act. It's the new technology platform.
It is.
And we're being left behind. And just to wrap up the Android statement, you know, it is true. It's true that the success of Android equals the success of the Dalvik virtual machine and the Android app ecosystem, which is portable to any platform. So, while right now it means more Linux kernels exist in the world, it doesn't necessarily mean that 5 years from now more Linux kernels will exist in the world. It could be a BSD kernel or
it doesn't matter. Not technologically, anyway.
So, it's a tough call. Should we move on to the next story?
Because
I think
we
beat that one. All right, I got the last story on the news docket here, B-Man, because I'm really excited about this. I've had my comments before, but this is looking really good. GNOME 3 Alpha has been released, and I've even got a couple of screenshots here. And I got to say,
looks nice, isn't it?
The new GNOME shell is looking pretty slick. It's looking a lot better than I expected. I like the... I don't want to call it expose, but it's kind of like one of those all Windows effects. I'm digging that. It's got built-in messaging, sort of like the Ubuntu menu. It's got a completely new design, and you've got an improvement to Nautilus and the new application chooser. And I kind of thought, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they trying to do a new application switcher? And then I realized it's because about one out of every three distributions already replaces the GNOME menu launcher anyways.
So obviously there's a need for something new.
Yeah, so that's why they're doing that. So you're probably going to be able to get your hands on this. I think the first distro that's going to ship with this alpha, at least as an optional install, is I think Ubuntu 11.04 is on the docket to have the alpha as an option. And then I think that'll be the first big distro to come out with it. So you can get your hands on it then, or you can.
And honestly, you know, and if you're really itching, you can get it now, and you can toss it on there and tinker around with it. I haven't yet, and I kind of feel like a tool for having not tried it yet, despite the alpha being out. I'll have to try it over the next week or two and really give it a full run.
What I kind of dig is this new launcher is activated with a button push, and then the search field when you do that is immediately the active element, and you can start typing, and it. You know, it'll find that, and you can just hit enter. So you can actually launch applications now, sort of like GNOME do mouseless.
Yes,
I kind of looking forward.
I mean,
because
realistically, I mean, I kind of use GNOME do half the time anyway.
It's like the first GNOME based utility I install after I get Dropbox and Chrome installed.
GNOME do well.
I put Chromium on there pretty quick.
My virtualization tools come on there pretty quick. But anyway, it actually looks pretty cool. I know we've actually made a fair bit of fun of GNOME Shell and GNOME 3 in the past. A lot of fun. We were kind of merciless. We kind of jabbed them in the eye repeatedly with a hot poker. But it does actually look kind of cool. So I'm hopeful that it runs well. Now, granted, it's alpha, so everyone, if you do try it out, cut them a little bit of slack. I'm going to have to cut him some slack. Look at it purely from a point of view of what it could be when it's not alpha anymore. Once it's in at least late beta, then we can start really criticizing the heck out of like performance and stability and all that. But this does look kind of interesting. I'm curious, especially with, you know, Canonical going with the Unity route and saying, you know, we're not going to use GNOME 3. We're building Unity, and in fact, we're even building a KDE or a Qt version of Unity for non-3D accelerated platforms or non-3D accelerated machines, which is really splitting off from GTK and GNOME to a really intense degree. So I'm curious what this is going to mean, and I'm really curious what OpenSUSE and Fedora do in relation to GNOME 3 right now. You know, no matter what their plans are, if they come out and say, yes, we're going to do it as soon as possible, or no, we're going to wait for a while, really it's going to all depend on how good GNOME 3 is when it comes time for their release cycle. So,
What happens if GNOME 3 rocks? What happens if GNOME 3 rocks?
If GNOME 3 rocks, then you know what's going to happen.
Nobody's going to switch to Unity except for Ubuntu.
No, that's the whole thing. And it's going to go a little bit deeper than that. Canonical and Ubuntu are really investing heavily in not just building Unity, but promoting the hell out of it. So,
and I think I'm on record saying I don't necessarily disagree. It could be a solid differentiator in the Linux desktop.
However, let's just say a hypothetical here. OpenSUSE comes out next release or the release after hits. It's got a really well polished version of GNOME Shell and GNOME 3. Looks great. They've added that kind of classy kind of green thing that goes on OpenSUSE, and it just looks really cool there with the GNOME 3.0 look. And it rocks. And everybody wants to try it out. Well, then everybody's going to be installing whatever that distro is, OpenSUSE. And all those Ubuntu users who are most interested in, you know, a Linux with a great usable environment, with a cool looking environment, they want an easy to use Linux distro. That's what really got Ubuntu on the map. They're going to be looking at that and going, well, you know what? I'll give it a try. I think you could see a moment where a distro, say, OpenSUSE has been moving along here at the 10% mark in user share, and Ubuntu's up here in the 45% user share mark. You could see it joink and crisscross in like a 3-month segment. And I know people don't upgrade all that fast, but if enough of the power users do, that'll make all the difference in the world.
And if there's enough incentive,
that little bar on the right side of DistroWatch will just go crazy, and everything will be flip-flopping all over the place. So I think that as crazy as it sounds, this could be a differentiating factor. And this could also be huge for KDE4. Because if people are trying out Unity and trying out GNOME 3 and they step away and they're like, dude, this stuff blows.
Or enough has changed, I might as well just jump over to KDE at the same time.
So honestly, there's three possible options happening right now for the kind of the de facto user experience in my mind. And I think it's totally anyone's game.
You know, a good, solid, easy-to-use, really polished implementation of GNOME is what put Ubuntu on the map. I mean, really, all the big guys, a lot of them, with exception of Fedora Core, were going KDE. And GNOME, so we're going to come along, we're going to pick certain applications, we're going to do nice, polished GNOME. Wouldn't it be funny if another distro said, all right, we're going to do a really nice GNOME 3, and that's what steals Ubuntu's market share, is somebody beats them at their own game again.
That's true.
all over again. History repeats itself.
It could switch.
Then again, Unity could rock.
In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested. Huh. But honestly, we're not really going to know for at least another 2 months, because that's the earliest that we're going to see Unity shipping on something. And honestly, by that point, we'll see a little bit more polish with GNOME 3. So we'll really see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Honestly, at that point, I think we'll be able to be ready to actually make some predictions about what's going to occur.
I'm looking forward to it, because we're just going to get to cover all this stuff on Linux Action Show. So all this stuff we're going to dig into, and we're going to feature it here, and so people are going to hear
it. Man, I'm going to be wiping and rewiping my test machine like every 3 days to get all this stuff figured out.
I know, man.
It's going to be so much work.
I know it.
You're welcome, Internet.
The things we do for you guys. Now, that's all the news, Brian, but that's really all the show we have this week, too. It's a little bit of a shorter show, and I thought there's a ton of stuff to focus on there that we could dig into, and I think that worked pretty well.
I forgive you.
Hey,
you're totally welcome.
Now, I would love to hear some people's thoughts on any of the topics we covered today. So there's, of course, the comments wherever you're watching this, over on our website or on YouTube or wherever you're at, but also the Colony at jupitercolony.com. You can check out, and there'll be a thread in there just for the Linux Action.
There sure is.
B-Man, is there anything else, any other business you want to attend to before we just wrap this episode
up? Let's see. We talked about the Facebook.
Facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting.
Talk about the Colony.
The announcements. Forum.
That's
the
pretty
releases.
Exciting. There's Twitter.
Yeah.
There's Twitter. Brian Lunduk and Chris Elias. Good stuff.
Yep.
Good stuff.
There you go.
That's darn near it as far as I can tell.
Okay,
yeah,
man.
That's good stuff.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Linux Action Show. Now, we come out every Sunday over at jupiterbroadcasting.com. And while you're there, you can get the show in pretty much any size and format you want and subscribe to the RSS feed to get it automatically when a new episode comes out.
You know what
I want?
Why
would you
want
to do that?
I want an Arch-powered phone.
Yeah.
I just decided.
Run Amigo. Run Amigo.
No, I want an Arch.
I do.
Arch-powered.
Linux Action Show!
I want Arch. Anyway, yes.
Arch on a phone?
Arch on a phone. That's what I'm talking about.
You crazy, man. Wow.
That's hardcore.
That'd be a fast phone.
That'd be hardcore.
Now, that would be a phone that would outperform all the
Come
other
on,
phones,
man.
I bet.
The Linux Action Show. Hardcore.
Yeah, totally. Maybe we'll get the new GNOME Alpha 3 on our
phone,
too.
GNOME Alpha 3 on top of Arch on my phone. Hardcore.
Well, maybe somebody out there can let us know how it goes, and then we'll cover it. Oh, hey, you know what I got? I got coming in the mail, theoretically. This should be pretty fun. A really small... So they're sending it in for a review unit. Like, I think it's like smaller than a shoebox, maybe about the size of like an external USB drive, home server, Linux home server. It's like this complete home server solution in a tiny little package.
Nice.
And they're shipping us one for review. At least they should be.
Awesome.
So we should cover that on a future
episode. I love the hell out of that.